1, 2, 3.
Hey, welcome to the Smartest Amazon Seller Podcast. We are going to make you smarter today. I guarantee it. I love getting deep into a niche subject and with someone that understands a niche of selling on Amazon way better than I do. And I actually met Josh because he had me on his podcast, Ecom Breakthrough. So we could chat about that, some of the things that he's learned from the podcast. But really, we're going to jump into his brain around the subcategory that he looks like he's making a pretty good living off of. So I have with me Josh Hadley. Hey, welcome to the pod.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Happy to be here. Long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, no way. Awesome. So your business is Hadley Design. It is a stationary designed product, private label on Amazon. That's what you're doing today. But like most good entrepreneurs, it's not exactly where you started. You kind of had to pivot a little bit. So tell us about your background, or even your background, what got you into Amazon and some of the first categories you were in, and then kind of how COVID flipped it around.
Yeah, 100%. So it's an interesting journey, but I don't think it's any different than many entrepreneurs' journeys, which is a lot of failings, a lot of mistakes, and just ultimately just continuing to move forward without giving up. And sometimes you can have those breakthroughs. And as soon as we found those breakthroughs, we started doubling down. And that's kind of like the overall synopsis of our story. But this all starts when I'm a, 6, 7, 8-year-old kid growing up. I saw other people that were selling lemonade or snow cones or whatever on the corner of the street. And I was like, I want to do that same thing. And so, I have great parents that supported me in my wild business ideas. And sure enough, for years, I would sell anything I could think of during the winter season. I was literally selling hot chocolate. I even sold like Christmas ornaments just from the corner of my street.
How many hours on the street do you think you put in?
Oh, shoot. Hell no. hundreds of hours.
Okay. Well, that beats me. I probably had about 20 hours of
20 hours.
Honest street vendor experience. I do feel like I had more of a natural inclination to, like selling on eBay, the thrill of an auction, being a seller, which definitely relates to Amazon. You were just in the middle of your story. Jump into, get us to your Amazon selling.
Yeah. So my wife and I graduated college. We went to the University of Utah. We both graduated at the same time. I graduated with my MBA. She graduated in early childhood education.
Yeah.
So I had a job offer with American Airlines. So that brought us from Utah, moved us down to Dallas, Texas, which is where we're currently at now. And when we moved down here, my wife was like, hey, do I need to go get a job? Or I've always loved art and I've always loved designing, but I've never actually studied graphic design. Do you mind if I just toy around with this for the summer? And I was like, yeah, that's fine. My income will be sufficient for just the two of us. So go ahead, do what you're going to do. So she ended up, she's always been super, super creative at a very young age. She won national art contests even at a young age. She actually designed a greeting card for, I don't know what greeting card company it was, but it was selected as the winner. And it was the one that got published and actually went into distribution when she was in her young, 8, 9, 10 years old. Right. So what I love about this story is both her and I are doing what we absolutely love to do. And I'm a big proponent of whatever it was that set your soul on fire when you were an 8, 9, 10 year old, that's truly who you are deep down inside. And so I love that today my wife and I are both living deep down, who we truly are on the inside. Mm-hmm. And so
I guess that makes me a nerd.
Yeah. What's your story, Scott? What were you doing when you were 8 years old?
Probably video games. I got really nerdy into strategy games. Generally, I still am into strategy games. But I play more board games lately, and me and my wife, we get into that. But that's kind of how I play. I think I've heard this on other podcasts where, like, you know, people that get like really into, like, you know, say competitive gaming actually do pretty well in business because, you know, you take some of those same skills, jumping into a situation, trying to minimize and maximize, like, different levers.
Next we're going to see you, you know, winning some of these video game tournaments or whatever. There's crazy money to be had in some of those. Yeah.
I don't think I've played a video. I haven't played a video game in 6 months. I'm on a fast. who knows how long that lasts, but like, it's a productive fast so far. But oh shoot, I do watch other people play a little bit in my downtime. I'm a new dad, so and a business owner. It's not a great leisure time of life. you've been in these design categories where, like, people actually, like, you know, you design something, people buy it. That could be stationary, education products, even down into like t-shirts, mugs. Tell us about this category.
So this category, at the end of the day, design wins. And what's interesting about it is that, you know, a lot of people will throw out, you know, hey, what's a good conversion rate on Amazon? And a lot of people are going to say, oh, 15, 20% minimum. And in design-based product categories, 5 is the average. Yeah. Some categories you're down to 3. It's similar to like apparel where it's just, you know, whatever style or preference the customer has. Now, here are the pros and cons of this type of niche. The reviews don't matter. That's the best part about this. You can launch a product, doesn't matter what the reviews are. You don't even have to have any reviews. If people just like the design, they'll gravitate towards it. The downside on that is that your moat around your business is just how good is your design, period. Right? It's not a review moat. It's not how long you've been around. It is like, how good is your design? And as of late, we've seen like profit margins getting squeezed a lot. And so it's an interesting category. And I was just talking to my team about this, and we're looking to kind of have yet again another pivot, you know, and we could go deeper into my story, which is, you know, we've had to pivot the business multiple times to get to where we are.
You started, you were in some party supplies, and that obviously doesn't do very well in COVID before. And so you're familiar with this pivot. What would you pivot? I mean, maybe you don't know yet, but like, what would actually push you to do that?
Yeah. So let's talk about kind of like how things originally began. You know, my wife started designing wedding invitations just for some friends. Mm-hmm. That then ended up turning into referrals. They referred more friends and they were just like, oh, she's so good at what she does. I ended up creating like a whole sales funnel process from like Facebook ads. And we had like a 6-month waiting list. However, the challenge that I quickly realized was that this business was only scalable up until like how much my wife could work. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it certainly quickly got to a point within the first year that I was like, okay, the only way to scale this is to either A, bring on more graphic designers, which trying to replicate a graphic designer, good luck. I think we've hired countless number of graphic designers at this point. We're well over into the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s of different graphic designers that we've tried to work with. Long story short, nobody's been able to even come close to replicating what my wife's been able to do. But one of the first things that pivoted us into Amazon and away from doing custom wedding invitations was that we had numerous customers that would reach out after designing their wedding invitations and say, hey, could you design recipe cards for our bridal shower? And I was like, that's a really weird request, but okay, well, you're not going to pay certainly as much as you would pay for custom wedding invitations. But the idea in my mind came up of, what if we created like some mass produced recipe cards that people could just buy if they wanted, right? And we'd take some of our top trending like wedding invitations designs. And that's what we launched on Amazon. That was the fall of 2016. And we quickly sold out of those within the first like couple months. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was like, oh my goodness, if this is possible just starting here, like, yeah.
There's less headaches than dealing with like a a phone call design review or like whatever, you know, like someone like wants a small tweak here and there, like more transactional.
100%. So that originally I was like, okay, can we do like fill in the blank wedding style invitations? We took our best performing wedding invitation designs and put them on there. And sure enough, people were still interested in those like fill in the blank style invitations. And that, I mean, we did $1 million our first year on Amazon. And I was like, okay, wow. This is amazing. Wow. We scaled all the way up to, so before COVID hit, we had crossed over $5 million in revenue. That's actually when I quit my job at American Airlines. So I was with American Airlines the entire time while we're building this thing. We generated $5 million in revenue before I ever pulled that ripcord. And what's funny is like, I always thought like American Airlines, that was like my safety net, right? I had this salary and this was my safety net. And like, that's why I kept holding on. I was like, oh, I can do another year here and we'll just keep building it on the side. But so I quit in like the fall of 2019, right? And we know COVID's just around the corner.
Yeah.
And so anyways, I maybe quit prematurely, but it was ready. Like the business was ready for it at that time. And again, we were so invested in party supplies at that time that when COVID hit, we watched our business drop by 90% overnight.
Yeah.
And this was back. I was like, we just watched everything evaporate. Mm-hmm. Everything that we had built over the last 3-4 years is now essentially evaporated into thin air. Like, and there's nothing you can do to change it. So it was like one of the most challenging, like, honestly, like 3 to 6 months. And you know, basically we just said, all right, what else is trending now? And obviously a lot of people were going into homeschool at that time. So we're like, hey, what other products like party goods aren't any good right now. So what else could we get into? And so we found, you know, some educational posters, that were kind of like, we launched it. It was a super competitive market, but we're like, this is our last flyer. Like, let's give it a shot. Mm-hmm. And we quickly became the number two seller for these posters. And literally, like, the top competitors had thousands of reviews, like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 reviews. And we immediately just jumped to the top just because of the design aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And so then that pivoted our business into, you know, we started coming out with a lot more educational related products. But that leads me to, you know, kind of where we're at now. And you ask like, okay, well, what do you see kind of the pivot being now? So I was telling my team this earlier, all through up until really last year, I feel like was like some type of like turning point on Amazon for whatever reason. And historically, whenever you would go into Target or Walmart, I would look at the prices that a lot of like stationery suppliers would be charging either for like their party invitations, thank you cards, or any paper goods that you see, even like calendars and things like that, that you would see on the store shelf. And I would laugh and I would be like, they're charging $8.99 for a pack of 10 invitations. Like, they're idiots. Like, they're making no profit on this, right? Well, I was charging upwards to $15. Okay. Well, guess what? The tide is completely flipped at this point. And now we see just, it's literally unfathomable of like the amount of like overseas sellers that are so willing just to make like 10 cents on selling a unit. So now we see retail being a much bigger play because the prices on Amazon now are cheaper, a lot cheaper than what you could go find that product for in retail. I mean, my wife and I, literally this morning, we were at Target. We were taking pictures of end caps and ideas of like where we're getting into kind of the next phase of the business. And because that's, we see the writing on the wall. We see the prices on retail store shelves being now 3x the price of what some of the best sellers on Amazon are. And so for that reason being, we're like, okay, it's time to make this next move. And that doesn't mean like Amazon's forever bad. It just means it's 10 times more competitive than it's ever been.
It feels like it's like been a race to the bottom, but
100%.
Are they coming up with new designs or?
Yeah, you can come out with new designs. However, here's the thing that has happened. So Amazon used to do a really good job of like policing IP infringement and stuff like that. What's happened is all of these overseas sellers, what they're doing is they're going to Etsy and they're taking the best sellers that are on Etsy and they are literally copying them pixel for pixel. And these small Etsy sellers have no idea that they're kind of being taken advantage of and their stuff's on Amazon. A lot of those groups.
Okay. Yeah. People in chat, they're like, hey, like my stuff just got ripped.
Yeah. They're like, I see my stuff all over Amazon, but I can't get it taken down. And so Amazon, and we kind of noticed the same thing because we have the amount of cheating that happens. I mean, it happens in every category, but especially in a design-based category is just insane. And unfortunately, we spent literally probably like 5 years of not protecting our own IP, and that's shame on us. One of the biggest things that we've done as of late is we have hundreds of design patents for our products. In addition to that, we have copyright certificates for every single one of our designs, which means we could go claw back revenue from a lot of those overseas sellers. So we could actually go sue them in court and actually claw back a lot of that revenue, and Amazon will freeze their accounts.
Right. That's kind of, I think, how most people understand copyright law is supposed to be implemented. The people that actually create it, they get to use it. But that's still a challenge. It feels like it's a bit of a whack-a-mole. And
100%.
The truth is, Amazon doesn't want to be a part of the whack-a-mole game either. They don't love – their platform is so in demand that people just can like take advantage of a situation.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's what we've seen change on Amazon, right? Like Amazon used to be comfortable being the middleman and they would like take things down. Now, basically, the script is this on Amazon. If you truly believe you have a case against these guys, go sue them in court. Then we'll do something about it. So that's the challenge. A lot of these Etsy sellers, they can't sue anybody in court. They're not going to pay the legal fees. Well, and so they just get taken advantage of.
Only 20% of them would even be aware or even like
100%.
Like have the wherewithal to like do it. So like these, copyright infringing sellers, they're going to win as more often than they don't.
Yeah. And, Scott, we actually, to a lot of the listeners, if you've ever battled with something similar, whether it's like design patent related or anything where you feel like, somebody overseas is copying you. So I had somebody on my podcast that literally was like game changing information for me. His name was Hilton Hart. So you could go look up that podcast episode. Literally, like I kept probing further and further down because I was like, dude, dispel the entire like process of how you're going about doing this. Like as an example, he ended up acquiring a business that he knew there was just a bunch of infringement going on. So what he did is he ended up acquiring that business, ended up creating this John Doe case, which again, if you go learn the details about it, you can go listen to the episode. Okay. Ends up creating this John Doe case in Chicago, which then groups all of these hundreds of sellers that are essentially cheating. Okay. They've copied patented stuff and he sues them. Amazon immediately freezes their account funds and then it goes to arbitration. And, sure enough, like the court orders, like, yeah, these guys cheated from you. So you could go collect damages. Anyways, he then makes more than what he paid for that acquisition just in collecting all of those royalty fees and basically those damages for that product. So like that's like it was literally was like just like a mindset shift for myself to be like, there's a whole other approach to this instead of just feeling like, it's always whack-a-mole. It's actually like, how can you use IP as a very defensible and actually an offensive strategy for your
business? I've been a part of a lawsuit that targeted 30 sellers and, we've sold tens of thousands of products. So like, I'm not surprised that something that we sold like infringed. It was actually the title of the product, like had a trademarked term. They grouped us all in. we settled as fast as we could because we had actually a $500,000 sitting in Amazon. Like, yeah, it was worth it for us to pay a few thousand dollars to just get out of it. Even though we were just a reseller.
Yeah.
We just wanted to get out as fast as possible. You know, I think a lot of brand owners, specifically creative owners, should, you know, leverage that. So you could almost say the barrier to entry to this business for reals, like the business that you have, is good design. Like, when you think of people, say, like, you know, have you ever like told someone or watched someone get into this space? Mm-hmm. And what do you say? What do you think about, like, how did they succeed?
Yeah. So what's interesting, so we source all of our products here in the US right now. And what's interesting about this is I think it's a competitive advantage. And because one of the things that's challenging is, like, you have no idea what design is going to perform well. And I know everybody talks about these platforms like IntelliVee, Product Pinion, Picfu. And yeah, you could go survey their audience, throw out a bunch of designs, see what people think. However, the downside of that is, I don't know, I would say the majority of the time we've seen the exact opposite come true. Right.
What,
on what Amazon.
What people think and what people buy are two different things.
100%. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The people on Amazon are voting with their money. The people on Product Pinion and IntelliVee, all product and all of that, they're getting paid to check a box for you, right? And so they have no investment. They're just going to be like,
They're not in market.
Correct. They're not shopping for it.
Yeah. They could give you an aesthetic opinion. And I bet you most of them try and do a good job. Like, this is what appeals to me. But they're not in market. They don't have that pain right now. Connected to a price, connected to a fulfillment, you know.
Yeah, so you've got to come out with, at the end of the day, it's a numbers game, right? You've got to come out with a lot of designs. I mean, at this point, how many SKUs have we released? Man, probably over 2,000-3,000 just of like hand design stuff that my wife has created. Now, are all of those doing well and crushing it? Certainly not. But like, that's the level of like testing that it takes in order to see if something's going to hit. So the challenge is, you know, with a lot of the high MOQs from overseas, it's like, you're not going to print 1,000 or 3,000 of these units just to test it out. If you do that, like, good luck to you. We'll be running circles around you in the meantime.
How much do you think success depends on merchandising or a product launch?
At the end of the day, not a whole lot. So there's not a real big SEO secret.
How do people find your products?
Yeah, SEO is a big component of it, but advertising, I mean, at the end of the day, that's how we always have launched products from day one. We've been overly aggressive with PPC. And I think that there's something within Amazon that says, like, holy crap, these guys' click-through rate on these ads is insane. I'm going to give them some organic ranking love at the same time. Just because, like, we're so outpacing the competition, because again, we're going to try to go for those top of search placements. Mm-hmm. And if people are just like clicking, they're like, holy cow, what is this design? It's so different than what I see out there in the market. Mm-hmm. That's there's really not a whole lot. We've never, ever had to do search, find, buy. Once have we done any of the rebates. Not that you would do that anyways.
Yeah. But. Now I definitely say, like, just do anything but that. Unless you want to risk your business. This is sometimes paper, like, cannot the cogs get, or like the cost of the product get like really inexpensive?
So yeah, we've actually looked at getting some quotes overseas. There are certain products that make sense overseas. And then there's certain products where, like, the landed cost is actually literally the same, if not maybe 10% cheaper from overseas.
Okay.
At which point, why would you then take a 90-day lead time versus a, right now I have a 10-day lead time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Having gone through 90-day lead times, it sucks.
Yeah.
you know, to make a decision like, okay, we're going to double down on this one. Wait 3 months. You're a different person in 3 months.
You're different. Yeah, for sure. And the market's going to shift, and anything that's design driven as well. Uh-huh. Like, you've got to jump on trends ASAP. Yeah. And you know, we have a Merch by Amazon account as well, which is a whole other tangent in and of itself.
Merch by Amazon. How many product types do they offer? Is it like very limited? It's like, okay, mugs, shirts, sweatshirts.
Yeah. Like t-shirts, premium t-shirts. Then they have like hoodies. They have, long sleeve shirts. They have tank tops. They then have, like the cell phone little poppers. They have like throw pillows of all things. They have little tote bags. They have a decent assortment, and it's grown over the years. But oh my heavens, that thing is just like, that is purely a numbers game at the end of the day, because your product, your main images look the exact same as everybody else's. You only have, I don't even know what the character count is in the title right now, 50 characters. So you don't get a lot of like room to really do anything with SEO.
What's the best Merch by Amazon product of all time?
For us?
Or for like what you've seen out there, like, oh, this person did.
T-shirts. I mean, t-shirts at the end of the day.
A specific shirt that like someone created that just like made them $1 million?
Oh, yeah. I think there's those designs every single month. So you could go on to, so the platform to look at is called merchinformer.com. Mm-hmm. Okay. So go to merchinformer.com and they will actually show you like the top trending designs. So especially during political campaigns, like I know there were like Trump shirts that were just on fire back in 2020, like just lighting it up. Really, and Amazon doesn't like this, but if you can kind of play in the gray areas, if you can go off of like when the Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce thing was a big deal all over the NFL, right? Like people created some, like they're skirting around the edges there, but they were like Swifty t-shirts with Travis Kelce and stuff like that. And they were absolutely crushing it. So at the end of the day, it's staying in tune with like pop culture, what's going on in the news.
I would say they're gray area because they're not using logos or like trademark things, but like close to it.
Correct. Yeah. They're close to it. Like, so like in a good example of this is like, cause I saw one of these shirts. It was like Taylor. And it, like, you can tell like it's a Taylor Swift, and they've got like Swifty is like not, it's not Taylor Swift in one keyword phrase. It's like Swifty's like worked into their bullet point somewhere else, right? So you can see that. And here's the real secret sauce for a lot of these like merch sellers is like, if you build a really good community, like a lot of them that do really well, they have a big Facebook group, and they're just like a lot of moms, and then they'll drop like, hey guys, I designed this new shirt, and like the moms like love the pop culture, whatever's going on, and they'll just go, they'll go purchase it.
It feels closer to like a meme account on Instagram. Yes. Can do this where like it's just like you're humoring them, but like every once in a while it's like, oh, I got a shirt, it's funny. Yeah, that's cool. Now I have one last question about the stationery. Is like the FBA process, like does that stuff get damaged?
Yes and
how do,
no.
How do you package that stuff? How do you?
Yeah, so it's all like either shrink wrapped or it comes in like a poly bag. So really it's pretty straightforward. And again, that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of people like ship in like boxes, and like the boxes make things bigger, right? Which increases your FBA fees. And I mean, that I think is like the biggest challenge for any Amazon seller right now is navigating the Amazon fees. And here would be my response to this, right? I'll say this quote unquote, I'm actually glad that the FBA fees are getting harder. And the reason why is because when things get harder, fewer people will try, fewer people will push through those barriers. And honestly, like, and we talked about this before we hit the record button, the biggest moat for any Amazon seller right now is the complexity of Amazon's system now. this thing, you know, compared to what it used to be like before COVID in 2020, like, man, those were the early days of you could make a mistake here, there, shipping in too much inventory, too little inventory. And you wouldn't really, it wouldn't be like damaging to your business. Now, Amazon has basically said, you better be perfect with your inventory planning, because if you're not, we're going to make sure you pay for it.
Yeah.
And it's going to get really, really expensive for you. If you need to remove inventory, thanks. It's going to be a dollar plus now. Whereas back in the day, I'm used to 20 cent removal fees, right?
Yeah, like 15 cent.
Yeah.
And
the game has completely changed.
Yeah, no, it's rough. But then again, you know, like the smart ones will still know, like, okay, these are margins I have to do, so I have to do this. Like they'll maneuver things around and not sell things at a loss, so that they could stay in business another day, so they could build a few extra designs. You've been around a lot. You've been doing your podcast. What are some of the most interesting things that you've learned on the podcast? Like, we obviously don't have time to like jump into all of that, but
yeah. So one of the most downloaded episodes is from Matt Altman, and he shared his launch process. Matt Altman, if y'all aren't following him, you should go follow him. That dude is wicked smart. He shared the launch process that he uses, and they're constantly launching new products. And he's not necessarily in a design-based product category, but it was a good mindset shift for me. Mm-hmm. And basically the gist of that was like, look, it is a quantity over quality type of game. But what he shared in that episode are there are certain benchmarks that you need to be measuring. And if you're not hitting those benchmarks, then you kill the products and you just move on. And basically you double down on what's working really well. And so one of those metrics that he shared was brand metrics. Okay. So if you're not familiar with that, you can go into your advertising console. I think it's like the heart button, I want to say. I don't know, on the left-hand side. It's one of them. But if you click on it, you'll see like brand metrics. Okay. And then you can go into like your specific category. Okay, because we're selling in multiple categories, but you could go into like your category and then get to like the very granular, like what's your lowest category level on Amazon. And then what Amazon's going to do is it's going to give you the median conversion rate for the entire category. They're also going to tell you who has the best conversion rate for the category. And then it's also going to tell you your product's conversion rate. And basically he uses that as like the guiding rule of thumb. To say, hey, you've got to be surpassing this benchmark within the next 60 days. If you're not, we're going to start killing this product, or we're going to be looking at optimizations along the way. How can we change our main image? How do we increase the click-through rate? There's a method to that madness. How else are we changing the secondary images so that we are conveying more value up front? So like that was like looking at the brand metrics, like that's probably like one of the good mindset shifts that came out of that episode that, again, so many people, one of the funny things I see is like one of my favorite comments on that video, because it's on YouTube, is like, how in the world does this thing only have 100 reviews? I've never heard like this level of like detail for like a launch process. So that's Matt Altman.
The best content that I've ever heard on Amazon doesn't mean it's like getting a ton of views or listens or whatever. Usually the best stuff is on podcasts. The YouTubers, they're gaming an algorithm. They're trying to look pretty and jumpy and trail. I've even seen a few videos where they're like, these guys are lying to you. And it's like this whole like Amazon, you know, insider conversation, where like the podcasts are where people have a longer bit of time to speak a little bit more loosely and say what they're actually doing. So that's a good segue. So, I mean, your podcast that you've been doing for a while, Ecom Breakthrough, you guys should check it out. We know that we only have so much time to listen to pods, but you know what? We could also recommend there's a podcast that you had this guy named Scott. Maybe you could check that one out. I don't.
This Scott Needham, he's a so-called smartest Amazon seller. So his is a good episode to check out.
That name doesn't always sit well with me. It's a little bit more braggadocious than I like to be, but it's fun. Okay. Well, Josh, thank you so much for coming and sharing and talking about a niche, you know, that has like strengths and challenges. And actually, thanks for being transparent with it all. Oh, there's one last thing that I forgot to say is your goal is to acquire design-based brands.
Yeah. So our long-term vision is to become a mini aggregator, so to speak. I know aggregator is a sour word right now in many people's opinions. Yeah. But a mini aggregator for design-based product brands. You know, my wife's a fantastic designer. So if anybody has a design-based business and they're looking to exit that brand, you're welcome to reach out to me at Josh at Ecom Breakthrough. That's Ecom with two M's. And would love to hear from you.
Yeah. And there's no better person to exit to than someone that actually really understands the business. And I guarantee you, most people don't have the level of knowledge that you do. Shoot, I just had to throw that plug in because I thought that was interesting. So now we're ready to wrap up. Thanks, Josh, for jumping on.
Thanks again, Scott.
Okay, with that, we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Take care.
One, two, three.